Okay, great. This is going to be a great presentation. We usually start out with news from Washington and GLOW. Any news today?
Well, not a whole lot. I did talk to Rachel this morning. Rachel Congdon is HMTRI's project officer. We have a project officer just like all the grantees do. Rachel didn't have anything new to report, but she wanted to wish everyone safe travels in August to the all-grantee meeting. And she wanted me to tell everybody that she was excited to meet and see everyone again. So that was all from headquarters. The only thing that I can think of from us here at HMTRI is just another reminder for the annual grantee meeting coming up August 17th and 18th. We have about 110 people registered. The hotel deadline, we were able to get extended to Friday of this week. And we're working on trying to get that extension again, but, you know, I don't know how many times they're going to do that for us. So if you intend to attend, be sure to send me an email at ghanne@eicc.edu, and we'll get you registered. Mike, I hear there's a lot of people on this call today that are going to be at the meeting, so you might want to give them a reminder on sending you resources for the flash drive. And that's all for me, Mike. Hello?
Oh, can you hear me?
Yes.
We have a flash drive that we give everyone at the meeting. It has materials that people send us from the different grantees and some reference materials in there. So if there's anything that you would like to send it to me. I'll put it in the reminder notes, but msenew@aol.com, msenew@aol.com. And Brandon, I'll put yours on there, but if you have anything else you want to put on there, what we do is we have the flash drive, and then we have a lot of folders in there, and we've got slides, and people send in their recruitment materials, their flyers, application forms, whatever they might have that they might want to share with other people. We'll have on there things, some extra things like sole source agreements, sole hiring agreements, project PLAs, labor agreements, and that type of thing that might be helpful, and people can take it back with them and click through it to see what's there. This last week, between the last PLC and this one, we had two webinars, and they were pretty interesting. I'll put a little bit of summary of those in the notes. First one was GroundWorks USA. There's 23 of them, and the week before we had heard from GroundWorks Providence. This was GroundWorks USA that put on an environmental justice webinar, and they told us about environmental justice programs that are going on around the country. They had three in particular. They were community development corporations, which we're going to talk about in a second. Then there was a really good webinar put on just yesterday on leveraging with Patricia Obermeyer from OBLR. That's the EPA office we all work under. Office of Brownfields and Land Revitalization, and they talked about a 14 points step that how you could leverage funds, and we'll be talking about this very document, and the document will be in our flash drive about 14 points that they find are very successful, a very successful process for leveraging your money, how to get money from other organizations to leverage the funds you have, things like organizing your project team, identifying your visions, getting citizen support, making sure your project components are all laid out very precisely and how much you need for each component and who to go after for money for each component. So we'll probably also talk about that at a future PLC. But those were the two webinars that occurred this week. I want to get into Coalfields, because this is an amazing organization. And I had just mentioned the importance of CDCs, Community Development Corporations. We spent a whole webinar the last week to GroundWorks about how it could be a source of jobs for environmental workforce development job training programs. We have a grantee who's new, brand new. We usually have grantees that have been re-upped 5, 6, 7, 8 times. Coalfields, they were awarded a grant in 2015. So there's just 1 year, but they are really exceptional. They form their own CDC, their own Community Development Corporation. And I'm going to talk a little bit about Brandon. He was at our Brownfields All Grantee meeting last year, along with three of his colleagues. But these are an amazing group of people. In 2010, now we're talking about West Virginia, Southern West Virginia, has been decimated probably a lot because of EPA regulations in air and water, who basically put coal out of business. So we're talking about a community that all the industry left. The primary employer in the community left. Brandon's from the area. He's quite accomplished. He's got a master's from Indiana University, the Kellogg School of Business. He's been involved in Clinton Global Initiative. He's been at Institute at Harvard Law School. And the local magazine in West Virginia said he's one of those 40s under 40s. That's one of those people we got to watch because he's shown himself to be an outstanding entrepreneur. And his interest is entrepreneurial justice, entrepreneurial social justice, social entrepreneurship. And what he and some of his friends did in 2010 was decided we could sit here and watch our community just go downhill, or we could do something about it. So they started their own community development corporation, 2010. Took them till, and he could tell us more about this history, but it took him till about 2015, and he decided we could incorporate environmental workforce development. Now that takes kind of guts because EPA basically, as I said, pretty much put many of these people in their mind out of business. But I think they felt that they could use the Environmental Workforce Development Program in their new Community Development Corporation to not only improve the community, but to train people locally, give them good jobs, give them an opportunity to sustain themselves in the future. They have a good website, and I'm going to turn this over to Brandon, but I really like their website, and I'm really going to encourage everyone to go there. It's not your normal website. You could show Brandon shows his social entrepreneurship in this website, but I really like the personal mantra of Brandon. It says, do justice, love kindness, and walk humbly. So I know he's not going to talk about himself, but I certainly wanted to introduce you all to Brandon. And Brandon, do you want to tell us about your program and how you get going and what you're doing over there?
Sure. Am I coming through okay?
Sure are.
Okay, good deal. Well, Mike, thanks for the introduction there. Actually, you did a really good job of kind of laying the groundwork, so that's good. That tells the story pretty well. Can folks see the slides, Mike, or do those just go on the...
No, the slides I sent out earlier, so they won't have the advantage of it. They'll be also in the post-session notes. They were in the announcements, and I'm not sure if people had the advantage or ability to open them up, but I'll also put them in the post-session notes. So you may have to lead us through those blindly right now.
Well, and that works fine. So I don't need the slides, but the slides kind of back up. I'll tell the story kind of narrative form. The slides will back it up with some of the numbers and everything, pictures to drive it home. So we are in Southern West Virginia. The communities that we serve, in, of course, in rural America, it's more by county than town. And so we serve 4 rural counties in southwestern West Virginia. Our economy has been decimated by the collapse of the coal industry. We have some of the highest poverty rates in the entire country right now. And it's the unemployment challenges leading to a lot of other challenges, health challenges, and addiction challenges that kind of come from the hopelessness. And so really challenging environment right now. Our key strategy as an organization is social entrepreneurship, absolutely. So we are a training entity We are a 501c3 entity, but we're also a real job creator. So what we realized in doing job training, that was all well and good, but it didn't matter if we were just training a bunch of people for jobs that weren't here. And so we realized that to really have an effective strategy, and this came out of conversations, community-based conversations, that to really be effective and to have levers that really can affect other challenges, we got to have a job creator. And so that led us to this strategy of social enterprise. So the way we describe ourselves today is that we're a family of social enterprises. And we have enterprises in sustainable construction, community-based real estate, sustainable agriculture, solar installation, the local arts-based businesses. And then also we have a program in deconstruction where we tear down buildings, resell, reuse, and recycle the materials out of them. These are, you know, abandoned, dilapidated buildings. And that's what led us to the environmental challenge. In these old buildings, we were running into a lot of environmental challenges, asbestos, lead, mold, a lot of old meth labs. And we realized we weren't equipped to address those challenges. We also realized there were a lot of jobs available for people to address those challenges. So that's what led us to the EPA program. It was a really good fit. All of our enterprises and all those different sectors, be it agriculture or construction or solar install or environmental remediation, they all use what we call our 33, 6, and 3 job training model. And that's how we organize the weeks of our trainees. So we hire unemployed people to staff these social enterprises. We focus on disconnected young adults, laid-off coal miners, and veterans are our three main areas of focus. And they work this 33, 6, and 3 model every week. So 33 hours a week, they do paid work on projects that contribute back to the community. Could be developing green, affordable housing, could be taking care of a community eyesore, could be Wayne, West Virginia's first ever solar panel installation project, which you'll see a picture of that in the slide. So 33 hours, they're basically working, and it feels like what working for any other company would. We start out at $10 an hour and go as high as $12 an hour. And these are for unemployed people who have no higher education. So it's not great pay, but it's better than minimum wage, and it's decent for an area with such a low cost of living like Southern West Virginia. 6 hours a week, our trainees are in the community college classroom working towards their associate's degree, and 3 hours a week, they do life skills mentorship. So it's a very holistic program with a lot of wraparound support. They sign a 2-year contract with a 6-month extension. So basically, the goal once they come on is to earn that associate's degree. Once they've earned that associate's degree, we then work to place them with an employer and to launch their career, set them on their trajectory for the rest of their life. So that's the 33, 6, and 3 model. We've created over 30 new jobs so far through that model, and we currently have 26 on-the-job training paid positions filled by formerly unemployed individuals. So again, we take on projects that really can transform a place, you know, cornerstone projects that can catalyze other development around it, and we really focus on true empowerment for people, not just a piece of paper or a certificate, but really reversing poverty cycles. And our work from the start, it's always had a green collar tilt. The word green is pretty politically challenging in Southern West Virginia, so really we just talk about it in terms of good quality jobs. We want good quality jobs that contribute to the health and well-being of the employees and the community at large. So there definitely are some good pictures. So now I'll delve into, that's kind of coalfield development overall. So our EPA environmental job training grant, it is available to our trainees, again, the trainees are formerly unemployed themselves, and a lot of them, especially here recently, most of them are laid off miners. But with the EPA grant, we opened up the trainings when we would bring in trainers for HAZWOPR or HAZCOM or asbestos or mold abatement, we opened it up to the public at large. So it helps our trainees, but it also helps the public at large. And even if they're not a full-time employee of ours, trainees from the community can still take advantage of our life skills training and our career placement services. So this grant has really been a way for us to help our current trainees, but more than that, to serve, to have a bigger impact reach a bigger scale throughout the coal fields. So we have two tracks in our training. We have an advanced track or advanced level and a learning level. The advanced level would mean basically that they are enrolled in the community college and they're doing the full life skills all in addition to the certifications that we offer. So it's much more involved. All of our on-the-job trainees are automatically enrolled in the advanced level, but other community members are encouraged to join advanced as well. Learning level is simpler and less intensive, and basically that's for folks to finish their HAZWOPER and at least two other certifications and to pass their exams, and then there are some life skills and placement services associated with that as well. So we offer, twice a year, we offer a rundown of training opportunities in HAZWOPER, safety and first aid. We wanted lead, the full 40-hour lead. We haven't been able to find a trainer for that in West Virginia, which is a challenge if anybody can help. So instead we do the 8-hour RRP. Asbestos, building trades for beams, caps, synthetic barriers, mold, meth lab cleanup or other illicit drug activity cleanup, HAZCOM, site survey and blueprint reading, and then the life skills and career coaching, as I mentioned. And so far we've had 17 graduates. So graduates are those who have completed their HAZWOPER and at least two other courses and passed all their exams and completed the life skills coaching that we do. And 15 of those are now placed in full-time jobs. And our placements include a water pumping company, local contractor, the city of Huntington, and then some of our social enterprises have actually placed some of the graduates as well that we didn't have beforehand, which is cool. And the average wage of our placements is $11.90 an hour. So our key partners on this, we work with Marshall University. They have an environmental and geotechnical center there, our community colleges, our Coalition for the Homeless Veterans, and a great local group, the Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition, who has a massive listserv and has really helped us with recruitment for this. And the last thing I'll hit on are just the challenges we've run into. The grant, it really did not match up well. We initially got interested in this because we wanted to train our current trainees who are on the job, and that really didn't match up well, and so we really were stretched by the EPA to kind of change the model to really make it available to way more people than what we're used to working with. And so that was an administrative stretch, and it's working out well, but it took a long time to get there. Communication, you know, with the EPA, I think sometimes we're saying the same things, but we're using a different vocabulary. Transportation, you know, we work in very rural areas, and any social service community organizing effort will tell you transportation is a huge challenge in the rural areas. Syncing up with the hiring season. So our advisory board, we have this great advisory board of employers, and they all told us do the training in the winter because that's when things are quiet, and then have them graduate in the springtime and they can come on board, which made total sense. But then we had a really harsh winter. So coupled with the transportation challenge with, you know, unplowed roads and icy conditions and sub-zero conditions and all of that made for, it was a real challenge. You know, this is probably an obvious one, but making placements, job placements is really hard in a county that has the highest unemployment rate and the highest poverty rate in the nation. That's just a really difficult thing to do. And then, you know, that Mike hit on this, the EPA is really despised in southern West Virginia right now. The perception is that, you know, the EPA has really singled out coal and brought the coal industry to its knees, and that is the reason why we have all these socioeconomic challenges. And so when we're marketing the program, I mean, we, you know, Adam, I should have said this at the beginning. Also on the line with Adam Warren, who's the president of our construction enterprise, Revitalize. Say hey there, Adam.
Hey, guys. How are you?
And Marilyn Wren, who is our chief operating officer. So these are really the two folks who are helping day in, day out make this training happen. They were just at a job fair promoting the EPA-funded training, And the minute they would say or they would see on a form this is EPA funded, some people would not want to be associated with it at all, even if they were a perfect fit, just because they're so, it just has a visceral reaction, the word, the three letters EPA. So that's a real challenge. So hopefully I'm on time here, Mike, and that's the end of the presentation.
That is great. And, you know, your model is so different than any other grantee that we have. We have a lot of grantees who are, there might be youth corps or some sort of construction corps. So they have a ongoing construction program, kind of like ArtShanks out in San Francisco Bay Area. They have that, and then they take some of their best students, and then they say, would you like to take some advanced training and do the environmental program? So then they'll add on to the environmental program. It's interesting because yours is kind of a variation of that, but different. It's not like anyone else's. You've got your core training program, and then some of your students can go on and take the environmental, but you also have a direct track right into your environmental program, which is very interesting.
Right.
Because anyone have any?
Desperately scratch around saying where there's some job opportunity. And one thing, a huge opportunity is, you know, we have mountaintop removal or strip mining. These are huge mines that remove, you know, thousands of acres of a mountaintop at a time. And now that the mining industry is gone, so we got to figure out what we're going to do with all these sites, and that's going to involve water testing, air testing, soils testing, and remediation work. So there's going to be a huge job potential in this field. That's part of what led us to where we are.
And you don't want people to leave the community. So your problem is very similar, or your situation is very similar to reservations and ultra, of course, you are ultra rural, but it's, you want to keep the people there. You want to train them, but you want to have them to have some good jobs. And
yep.
So are we talking about oxymorons? Is this even possible? And this is the kind of thing that you're confronting. And, of course, all of the issues associated with rural programs of recruitment and placement. And I'm sure the disparity and diversity of your participants is off the wall, would you say? Or
absolutely. Yep.
You've got veterans who might be older. You've got some young people who are kind of disillusioned, and you've got unemployed people who can't get jobs. It's quite a challenge.
Yeah, we've had all the way from 18 to 52.
Wow. How do you use the WIB at all? I noticed you had them as one of your partners, but it sounds, are they at all effective in your area, or are they dysfunctional?
The Workforce Investment Board, they fund some of our on-the-job training, some of the 33 hours they fund, but they treat us just like any other company that creates local jobs. It's not a particularly special program. And I wouldn't say, I mean, they're not ineffective, but they're not looked to as the leader for economic development and job creation. They're looked at as a partner, but not as like the leader.
Mm-hmm. Are there some questions out there from anyone?
Brandon, this is Desmond from Kansas. Can you tell me a little bit more about the construction program that deals with demolition and recycling?
We can. So that came from the community. We started out with the model and hiring people to build affordable housing. And we always mm-hmm. do a really intensive community engagement process for our projects. And the community was saying, you know, really, we don't need to be building more. Really, we need to be getting rid of these eyesores all up and down Main Street. And some of them, you know, we believe in historic preservation. We try and save the ones we can. But sometimes they just have to come down. They're too far gone. And we realized, hey, this is a building from 1910 during a coal boom. There's oak flooring, there's antique windows, you know, there's really interesting trim. And the hot thing in New York and Philadelphia and the more urban areas right now is the distressed reclaimed look. And so we kind of saw a chance to create a whole new market in southern West Virginia with all these buildings. And so our biggest buyer for that program is out of New York City. He does high-end bar and restaurant renovations, and he loves the story of buying this stuff from southern West Virginia, that we created local jobs to do it, and it has much more character than anything he could ever get at Lowe's or Home Depot.
Okay.
Deconstruction is a great way to, particularly in rural areas and even in old communities, it's a great way to put your people to work, because we're talking about lead and asbestos and other hazardous materials, hazardous waste materials in the deconstruction process, recycling, quite a few things. Many of our programs, Detroit, for example, tremendous number of people are being trained for deconstruction work.
Oh, okay.
It's interesting that over the last 2 weeks, we've talked, there have been CDCs, community development corporations, talking about what they're doing. And one of the things that we suggest to grantees is get close to your community development corporation, because what they do is they do what Brandon's done. They create many enterprises that are self-sustainable, and then they go into the communities and hire people from the communities. And some of those people need certain skills and certifications, which is where the Environmental Workforce Development Job Training Program comes in. If they can make a match between a community development corporation and their training and partner with them, they've got a feeder right into that. There's also some grantees that use, and Brandon worked for the housing development organization. Housing organizations in many cities have lots of jobs also, and some highway departments have it. But the idea is to find a feeder that you could use. Well, what they've done here in Coalfield is they created their own CDC, so they're feeding themselves. And so it's a great idea. And I think that what you did is really interesting, because you didn't have a CDC, but
correct,
you created your own. Now,
correct,
you also do have in West Virginia quite a few brownfields, but I'm sure, are these big companies that are coming in and then leaving that you really can't tap into them? I know
the
they got in a lot of EPA. In fact, I think they got some this year, some RLF grants and cleanup grants in West Virginia to clean up brownfield sites. I don't know if you've been able to tap into any of those, or if those sites are being cleaned up by large consultants coming in from somewhere else.
Well, right now, I mean, it's mining industry, is a lot of them, it's still active permits. So we're so fresh on the collapse that these are, they haven't actually closed the mines down yet, but it's imminent that that will happen. Mm-hmm. And so traditionally they have brought in like the largest firms out of Georgia, but what we're trying to do is show that, hey, we could have the workforce for a locally based company to be able to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And we're also trying to push these folks. I mean, traditionally it's kind of like with, instead of deconstruction, most people just hire two guys with a bulldozer and they knock it down and it all goes in the landfill and that, you have a green lot and that's the end of it. We're saying, hey, there's a more sustainable way to do this. We'd like to do that with the abandoned mine lands too, and say instead of just pushing a bunch of dirt around and having a flat field, let's think more creatively about how these can really become community assets and hire mm-hmm. local people in the process.
Great idea. Any other questions before we like to keep these down to 30 minutes? This is a great idea, and what you're doing is really different, very innovative, not easy. Our rural brownfield grantees struggle, and one of the big jobs is recruiting and placement, and you've kind of got your hands on these on a smaller scale. You're recruiting, and you've got people in a program that you can move into the Environmental Workforce Program, and then you've got your own jobs where you could place them, and your placement rate is excellent. So congratulations, y'all. Good job. Any other questions before we end? We don't like to keep people over too much. Great.
I don't have
our next question.
This is Glo, but I just wanted to mention that Brandon is also going to be doing a presentation at the grantee meeting this year on application and screening methods for students and instructors. So just wanted to throw that out there.
Great. And for all of you coming to the all grantee meeting, these are tend to be informal, like these PLCs. We don't mind if people go off topic, if they call on people in the room to share their experiences. We try to And Cofield was there last year, so they know. And many of you have. Some of you haven't been, but if you can get there, get a hold of GLOW. It's not quite too late, but the time is closing fast. Great. I'll send out your slides, Brandon, and a little summary of this PLC, and we'll all talk to you on August 10th.
Sounds good. Thanks so much for the opportunity.
Okay. Have a great week.